Now, these, you're probably thinking, wow, we've been, what time we start? 8? So almost 2.5 hours on just key element 4. Well, key element 5 and 6 are really quick. 7's going to be a little long, but I really want to, what I want to do is I want to get you guys at your tables to begin putting all of this together so that you're meeting with your counselee, Mark and Mary. Remember we talked about them in the case study. And you're going to give projects for growth. You're going to teach the truth. You're going to work through all of that together at your tables. So I think it's going to be really good. Let's go through. Let's do a quick review. What's key element number 1? Okay. Key element number 2? Key element number 3? Key element number 4? Okay. And key element number 5 is going to be to teach the truth. Okay, teach the truth. Discipleship always involves teaching. Right? Would you agree with that? Yeah, discipleship always involves teaching. And so Jesus is the truth-telling redeemer. Amy. Of course. Uh-huh. Yeah, so where did that fit in? I've actually got that in my notes back here. That's all right. Where did it fit in? Yeah, that's initial. Mm-hmm. So it goes into the idolatrous motives. It's the right side. Idolatrous motives, sinful responses, and consequences. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. All right. From here? Yeah. Discipleship always involves teaching. All right. So Jesus is the truth-telling redeemer. He teaches. Like, could we ever say that Jesus was not the teacher, right? The great teacher, even. And so he taught a lot, right? And so ultimately, the Bible points us to a person and a relationship, Jesus Christ as Savior and Redeemer. And does that make sense? All right. Again, we're going to kind of fly through this, not because I'm trying to save time. It's just the nature of this session. And real change occurs when people learn to understand themselves and their problems in the context of a living, vital relationship with Christ. You can kind of see the importance, right? The heart's the problem, and Jesus is the heart-seeking shepherd, right? He's the heart-redeeming one. And so we want to continually point people to Christ. What are some things that we often do instead of pointing them to Christ? Yeah, give advice. Like what? Follow your heart. Yeah. It'll be okay. What else do we tell them? This too shall pass. Yeah. What about, let's get more spiritual. You know what? If you just come to church. You need to start listening to, here, this song. By the way, be real careful. Oh, man. There's a lot of bad stuff out there. Right?
Faith over fear.
Faith over fear. Oh, my goodness. When that came out, I was kind of harsh on it online. And apparently, somebody I'm friends with kind of came up with that statement. It's like, faith over fear. Like, faith in what? You know? Like, yeah, yeah. What do you mean by that? What's your faith in? Yeah, faith. Listen, you just need to have faith everything's going to be okay. Yeah. Believe, yeah. Agreed. In what? Right? So we need to continually point people to Christ. Look what B.B. Warfield said. He said, there is nothing in us or done by us at any stage of our earthly development because of which we are acceptable to God. We must always be accepted for Christ's sake, or we cannot ever be accepted at all. This is not true of us only when we believe. It is true of us after we have believed. It will continue to be true as long as we live. Our need of Christ does not cease with our believing, nor does the nature of our relationship to him or to God through him ever alter, no matter what our attainments in Christian graces or our achievements in behavior may be. It is always on his blood and righteousness alone that we can exist. Yeah. That we've talked a lot in here about functional saviors. All of them are inept. None of them will work. Okay? We have to continually point people to Christ. Look what Robert Weber said. He said, the central problem of popular evangelical Christianity is its failure to comprehend the full implications of the incarnation. Yeah, we just miss it. You know, we have Jesus at Christmas, Jesus at Easter, you know, but we miss the scope of what he's done. We miss how he's will never leave us or forsake us. We miss the comfort he gives. We miss the encouragement he gives. We miss the love that he gives. Like, we miss all of that if we only focus on the baby in the manger, right? And not the conquering king. And so Jesus ends up becoming marginalized in our lives. Why do you think that is? And so that's really the next point. Why does Jesus become marginalized in our daily lives? And the first one is, we fear loss of control. Can I just lovingly tell you, you're not in control. You've never been in control. You think you're in control, you've been in control, but it's a hoax, right? It's deceptive. At any moment, one phone call can take all that away, right? One knock at your door, you know, one storm. So is there a better person to have control of your life than you? Yeah. And that's why we push that. Number two, why does Jesus become marginalized? Well, we've never really been taught how the gospel was meant to connect to our daily lives. This is what we talked about earlier, how we've made the gospel only a message for unbelievers. No, it's the message for the church. Like, we keep going back to that, right? My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness, right? And so the books that you see the gospel the clearest, it's all written to the church. Of course, all the ones are written to the church. And so we need to teach the truth. Well, what do we need to teach the truth about? Well, the big question, behavior or relationship. And this is something that we really want to hone in on for a few minutes. I loved how people change has hit that side of it. Is we become, be careful you don't become behaviorist. Just trying to change behavior. Right? If you just change behavior and the heart never changes, the sinful heart will manifest itself in some other way. Right? So, which is kind of, you know, the AA idea, right? Well, they're not drunkards anymore, so that's success. Well, it's not success. You know? It's not success. Just because behavior has changed, the heart has to change. And so because we're not behaviorists, we have to reach the heart, and so we have to teach truth, right? Well, what do we teach truth about? Well, the first thing is theology. Now you're going to really see within this side of why we keep saying discipleship or biblical counseling is discipleship in its purest form. You know, it seems like in recent days, I keep getting requests for 17, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old young men who want counseling, which is weird because that's not the norm, right? That hadn't been the norm historically, is that young men want to come for counseling. It's just, counseling has just become cool, right? Every athlete has a therapist or whatever. And then as I look into these lives, you know what I realize? They don't need counseling. They just need to be discipled. They just need to grow. That's it, right? Which is biblical counseling. Now, I was sharing with our elders yesterday morning. I said, we've got four young men who are requesting counseling that they don't need counseling. So that now this takes, you know, an hour and a half per appointment, right? That's a long time. That's 6 hours. When we could really just, let's just do a Bible study together. Get them grounded theologically, right? And so we need to teach who God is and what he has both initiated and sustained. We also need to teach Christology, right? Who Jesus is, what he did, and what's he doing even now. But this isn't just for the young men, right? This is all the way around. You'll be amazed how many people from good churches have terrible theology. Bad theology, bad Christology. Amazed. Number three, we need to teach progressive sanctification and how it works. How does progressive sanctification work? In fact, you know what? Let's do this. Let's just take 5 minutes at our tables, okay? And let's discuss, let's come up with a statement from your table of what, how progressive sanctification works and how people change, okay? So how does progressive sanctification work? How does it change? How do people change? We'll do that again, just maybe 5 minutes at your tables, and then we'll come up with a statement from there.